Hey, feeling unsure about your finances these days? You're not alone. That's why Noble Gold Investments is here to help. Just hear it straight from the people who they've helped. The Noble crew walked me through everything with no stress. With their help, I could finally sleep easy at night. And now this month, Noble Gold Investments is handing out a free 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coin if you qualify for an IRA. Invest in gold and silver with Noble Gold Investments. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. My speech at San Jose State University, followed by question and answer unscripted from the audience. As always, you can email us freedom@charliekirk.com and become a member at charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. Get involved with the most important organization in America. That is tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Enjoy this episode. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Wow, great to be here. I made it through that mess outside. Oh, my goodness. It's so funny. You know, I get sent these videos beforehand. These people say, fascism has got to go. I say, hold on a second. Who are the fascists? The people that are having a free speech event where if you disagree, you can come to the front of the line and have uninterrupted chance to talk? Or the lunatics playing rock music, screaming into the sky with barely legible signs saying, fascism is so... Do they even know what fascism is? No, of course they don't. And they've spelled it wrong. Of course they did. Probably affirmative action, honestly, why they're here. We'll talk about that in a second. And they can't even spell. And it really is something, though, because honestly, I look at these videos, and I'm not even saying this is a joke. The lack of purpose and meaning in your life that you have to go take to the street and like scream into the sky, like, I'm fighting fascism. I'm doing my part. Like, why don't you like organize your life a little bit? I don't know. Like, get a girlfriend, like, get a job, any job, get married, have kids. Like, there's something much more important in life than just being constantly angry at the world where you're trying to shut down the singular conservative event that's happening at San Jose State University. What it shows is that these people are intellectual midgets, and they are afraid. Are you allowed to say midget anymore? I don't care. I don't follow these rules. Intellectual little person, right, I think is the new term. I honestly don't care. With these people that are afraid to have a conversation, maybe there's some people tonight that do, this is not good for the country. It's not good at all. Because they think they know what they're fighting. Because they've been told that there's a fascist coming on campus. But in reality, we love America. We love the Constitution. We have really nuanced beliefs on certain things. We disagree on a lot of stuff, even amongst people in Turning Point USA. And we believe that we become a meaner country when we don't listen to the other side and allow a short window of time for people to be able to speak. And you think about it, you know, at San Jose State University, I want to thank, first of all, the police for all the help here. They've been wonderful. They've been really great. They've been really great. And thank you to the administration. It's been a battle, but we're here. So thank you, guys. I always thank the administration as long as the event happens. And so thank you. Appreciate it. The issue is this, though. When you do not have an opportunity to even hear the other side, then you think you know why you hate them, when in reality, you have this kind of built-in prejudice or stereotype. So you could go through like 4 years of San Jose State University, you'll probably get an overwhelming dose of Marxist postmodernism, Foucault, Derrida, Marcuse, one-dimensional man, you know, Rousseau, all that trash. And for, I don't know, 90 minutes, here we are, we want to offer a different point of view, and there's like a revolt. You think about it, like, wow, imagine having a worldview so fragile, so poorly constructed, that a singular speaker that comes on campus is a massive threat to the entire Marxist regime that you've built with every young person. That goes to show that they're afraid of defending their positions. That 60 minutes can undo 4 years of indoctrination. One event. That just goes to show everything. So, There's so much we can talk about here. I just learned before I came up on stage that Henry Rogers, otherwise known as Ibram X. Kendi, is giving a speech here tomorrow. Did you guys know that? I actually, in this room, you guys should go ask him questions. I wonder if Ibram X. Kendi says, if you disagree, come to the front of the line. That would be interesting. If you don't know who Ibram X. Kendi is, he's one of the archbishops of the cult of anti-racism. He took $40 million from, actually $10 million from Jack Dorsey. The money went missing. And he's under investigation by the Boston University now. It tends to happen, you know, with BLM organizers. All this money gets raised, then no one knows what happens to the money. And so I wonder if he'll actually take critical questions and disagreement. It's funny, Ibram X. Kendi, he was asked a question, which is actually part of what I want to talk about tonight. They said, hey, what is racism? And I'm paraphrasing, I want to be fair to him. But he basically said, racism is the systems that perpetuate racism. It's like, okay, answer the question without the word racism in it. It's like, you actually have to define what it is. And the reason he can't is because if he gave a definition of racism, he would realize that he's actually pushing some of the most bigoted, stereotyping, prejudiced ideas on the rest of us, which segues us perfectly to, you know, your new senator here. So you have a new senator. Congratulations. LaFonza Butler. Is that a household name in California? LaFonza Butler. I honestly thought it was going to be Oprah, honestly. Honestly, I miss old Oprah. You know what I mean? Like the Oprah in the 1990s. She was so nice and sweet, and now she's just become so mean and like new agey and kind of really strange. Anyway, that's a separate issue. But LaFonza Butler, okay, so you're Gavin Newsom, right? Not exactly my favorite person in the world. And by the way, what is all this like every time Gavin Newsom gets in front of a camera? Are you running for president? Are you sure you're not running for president? Like, makes you think like maybe you're not so confident in the current guy you have. If every time the governor of California gets in front of a camera, like, hey, are you running for president? Are you sure you're not running for president? Are you thinking? Are you dreaming? Are you, have it thought about the dream of you running for president? And so Gavin Newsom made a pledge, and he said, okay, if I am given the opportunity and there's an opening, I am going to pick a black female. So that was his pick. So obviously he wants to continue the tradition of affirmative action that has destroyed so many Asian and white families' dreams and aspirations here in California via the education system, and he wants to continue that into the Senate seat. So he picked someone who's not even lives here. She lives in Maryland. So that's interesting. Like, yeah, let me just go on Twitter and start finding every black female lesbian that I can that is like pro-abortion. And he found like LaFonza Butler, who lives in Maryland, by the way. I'm sure she'll declare California residency soon. And by the way, there are a million black women in California, but he had to go all the way to Maryland to find one that like fit the criteria, I guess. So again, I don't know anything about LaFonza Butler, but I know enough to know that I'm not exactly a fan of her worldview. But I will say this, it's actually not fair to her, and she should feel a little bit weird about it. Same with Ketanji Brown Jackson and Kamala Harris, another fan favorite from California. You guys really produce, you know, the world's best here. You know, you really got a real great. You got Pelosi, you got Kamala Harris, you're doing great. If I was LaFonza Butler, I'd feel a little weird because we know we're not picking you because of your credentials. We know we're not picking you because of your brilliance. We're picking you because you picked a very specific criteria in an affirmative action box. And that's, in some way, she obviously just wants the seat or the power, so she'll take it. But how is that fair to her? It's actually not fair. So everyone's going to think, okay, you're only there because, you know, we care about the melanin content in somebody's skin. And so affirmative action, thankfully, the Supreme Court overturned affirmative action, but schools are going to find ways around it. Yes, we should applaud it. It's an unbelievably great decision. But the people that push for affirmative action, we'll get to the root of it in a second. It really is deteriorating and destroying society. I'll prove to you how bad it is, right? Because, you know, we're always told, oh, there's white privilege. Yeah, okay, I'll believe there's white privilege the second I find a single college student that lies about being white on a college admissions paper. Like, yeah, find me anyone. If you have someone who's half black, half white, what do you think they're going to mark off? You think they're going to mark off white? No, of course not. They'll be penalized. They'll mark off black, and then they'll get in with a lower test score. And that's exactly what affirmative action does. And it is lowering expectations to try to say we are going to value pity and sympathy instead of excellence and meritocracy. It's against everything that has made this country the greatest country in the history of the world. And California schools are finding ways around it. So here's some real examples. You guys know UC Riverside, not exactly a right-wing bastion here. Did you guys hear about the story? So a few weeks ago, at UC Riverside, an ethnic studies professor Andrea Smith was forced into retirement after it was revealed she spent her entire career falsely claiming to be Cherokee Indian, when in reality she's 100% white. So she's like forced into retirement. So again, if there's so much white privilege, why are so many white professors pretending to be quote-unquote marginalized groups? The answer is because you get special tokens and you can move up faster if you pretend to not be white in the academy. Second example, an hour north of here at UC Berkeley. Oh my goodness. And anthropology professor Elizabeth Hoover publicly apologized for mistakenly claiming to have Indian ancestry. Completely bogus. She lied because she knows that everyone in America knows that if she says she's white, she gets no extra points. But being an American Indian or black or Hispanic, somehow that is good. By the way, this is the same thing with Elizabeth Warren with Pocahontas. Look, this is a fact. Affirmative action is morally corrosive. And it's not just something, again, that happens at the academy. We pick our senators through it. And by the way, the one thing I'm struck by is that there are so many students here that are Asian. It is like, I'll go through the numbers. It's so actively anti-Asian and anti-white. It should cause a revolt in this state, but we'll talk about that in a second. So in the world of affirmative action, instead of prioritizing, saying, I want to earn people's respect and admiration, it's a constant struggle of who can get the most points for something that does not matter. Let's go deeper. It actually prioritizes things you cannot change more than things you can change. America is at its best when we prioritize stuff that you can change. How much homework you study, how early you wake up, how seriously you take your classes, how disempowering it is to say that your skin color should necessarily dictate whether you get into college or not. In 2009, two researchers at Princeton calculated that to have the same chance of admission to an elite university, an Asian applicant had to score 450 points higher on the SAT than a black applicant who is otherwise the same. The SAT only has a score range of 1,200 points, 450 points. A few years ago, an AEI fellow found that black medical school applicants with below average scores were 9 times more likely to be admitted than Asian applicants with the same scores. In this recent Supreme Court decision, Students for Fair Admissions v. Harvard, Supreme Court just decided it was revealed that to keep Asians out, Harvard would systematically rate Asian applicants as inferior personalities to everyone else. Now, we were told that it was evil, and it was evil, when we had internment camps for Asians here in California during World War II. We're doing this by different means, by saying you as Asians are not allowed into universities because we want to prioritize some other marginalized skin group. Our elites are obsessed. And by the way, affirmative action is just discrimination and racism by different means. That's all that it is. And at the root of affirmative action is the attitude of what is society refusing to give me? And this is what people should think. Instead, it's what can I still give to society? That is what we should be telling young people. You are not entitled to be able to go into some university. You're not entitled to get somebody else's spot just because of the color of your skin. But at the root of all this, and at the root of some of the rancor outside, is one of the great lies that permeates our society. Because you can justify affirmative action, you can support affirmative action, if you think that every outcome you don't like is because of racism. Racism is kind of like the Force in Star Wars. It's invisible, it's everywhere, you could blame everyone. And by the way, I could look at articles, obesity, that's why we have racism is why we have obesity, bad, you know, health outcomes, either that or climate change, it's one of the two. But can anyone actually define what racism is? Because they'll say, well, black people can't be racist, only white people can be racist. Oh, so it's a power struggle is what it is. And what this is a nonstop concerted effort to try to deteriorate the promise of America, which is a Latin phrase, e pluribus unum, out of many one. They want you thinking about race all the time, and they're winning. They're making us care about senator skin color instead of anybody asking the obvious question, is this senator smart? Like, I don't, maybe she is, maybe she's not, I don't know. Is she qualified? Like, what has she done? Oh, no, she just, you know, fits in the box. Ketanji Brown Jackson, affirmative action pick, was asked a question, what is a woman? And she says, I'm not a biologist, I don't know. Literally, one of your 9 Supreme Court justices can't tell you what a woman is. It's okay, most college kids can't either, so it's, that's fine. She's right on pace. But here's the fact that people need to remember, is that when you have an outcome that you don't like, income levels, wealth disparities, there are other credible reasons to explain that away other than racism. In fact, there are hundreds of other explanations. If you blame everything on racism, everything, then you actually never get down to the root of the issue. And so the question would be this. If you were to say to somebody, they say, oh, America's a systemically racist country and there's all these issues and, you know, all this sort of stuff. You say, okay, so let me ask you, in the black community, do you think racism or lack of fathers is a bigger issue in the black community? Are you even able to ask that question? We have entire corporate America. By the way, a lot of these tech companies right down the streets are the ones underwriting this. Major tech company virtue signaling campaigns, NFL, which I'm so disappointed in them, with these stupid helmet decals, end racism. How about you say, end fathers abandoning the women that they impregnate? Like, that would be helpful. When was the last time the NFL, it's like, it takes all of us, you know, all these like kind of quasi-communistic phrases. Drives me nuts. I think they've toned it down a little bit this year, but I'm sure they'll be back in time for next year's cultural revolution. Presidential years, you know, they really got to ramp up. Everyone's going to get really mad for 9 months, and then they'll forget and do nothing and take advantage of those communities, and just that happens every couple of years. And so, but then the question is, the NFL, mostly watched by men, right? Instead of lecturing us about, I don't know, it's like the rainbow NFL thing that they do now, like, oh yeah, this really... that really just say, how about like stop being like a grown boy and a coward and stay with the woman that gets pregnant, because fatherlessness is destroying the fabric of our society. When was the last time you saw a single PSA from the NBA, the NFL? No, because that actually would solve the problem. And they're not in the business of solving problems. They're in the business of staying powerful while the problem continues. And so I'm happy to hear about all the different types of racism that exist in society. Like, oh yeah, there's all these disparate incomes. Yeah, there's other reasons to explain that away. But quite honestly, I won't even entertain that, like, at a baseline level until we talk about the stuff that is actually driving the societal decay, which is kind of my final point here, and then we'll do some questions until we run out of time, which is, I've been coming to the Bay Area for the last decade. And you guys know this. I'm just reminding you that, you know, San Francisco is a perfect, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, Palo Alto, it is a perfect picture of exactly where the rest of the country is heading, okay? And this entire place is governed by ideology, not by what you are experiencing in reality, but some sort of commitment to an ideological dream. In downtown San Francisco, Nordstrom's closed, Gump's closes. I mean, these are places that I'm sure some of you remember walking the streets of San Francisco without having to worry that you're going to get mugged or someone's going to defecate in front of you. It doesn't have to be this way. And there's a million different excuses. You know, I laugh. Gavin Newsom, you know, he wants to run for president. I'm like, where have you ever been in charge where it's not a hellhole? Like, can you just, like, tell me one place where you took the oath of office and it's not like some dystopian, like, feces-infilled place afterwards? Like, one place. Like, if you actually improved a place that you've been in charge of, like, I don't really care about your spin about every sort of thing, you know, the one-liners that you rehearse in workshop. Like, have you ever actually improved the quality of life of the people that you were in charge of? And of course they can't do that because their ideology, Trump's, that's funny. The ideology overrules what is actually happening in front of them. But here's the kicker, is that your elites, the people at the ruling class on the top of Silicon Valley, not just the Zuckerberg type, that's the elite of the elite. I'm talking about the next level down, okay? I'm talking about people earning $4, 5, 6, 7 million at Facebook, $4, 5, 6, 7 million at Google, is that they're just going to build bigger hedges and they're going to hire more armed security. They literally don't care that the structural middle class in the Bay Area is evaporating. It is being destroyed. Because for them, it's all just kind of peasants in their massive power grab. And what I find to be just hilarious is, you know, all these people outside that are so worried that one conservative speaker is coming to speak for 60 to 90 minutes and take questions. Like, when was the last time they went outside some mansion of some plutocrat here in Silicon Valley and was like, hey, why don't you do something to fix homelessness? Or why don't you do something to actually not just give money to, like, gender equity or the chemical castration of kids, but to actually help, I don't know, people buy groceries. No, because they are, again, they're just pawns in a bigger game, which is they need to be directed towards, quote unquote, fighting the right winger, when in reality, your own quality of life is deteriorating in front of you. San Francisco, some of you don't even remember this, was one of the world's greatest cities. It is now a joke. And by the way, I come from Chicago. Chicago's a joke too now. And it doesn't have to be this way. But it happened because we pandered to the radical fringe, a fringe that said, oh, the streets are for everybody else. You could do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do. You do not have a society that way. And what will the elites do? They'll just go further away. They'll buy another vineyard in Napa, or they'll go down to Carmel, or they'll buy another, they'll just flee. And the rest of you that want to make a life in this state and a life in this city, this area, are going to be looking around and be like, yeah, you know, I was kind of on board for this socialism thing, but I was really on board for the revolution, but why is there a naked homeless guy, like, on our yard and I can't remove him? Like, shut up, bigot! Like, oh, okay, great. And if there is an ideology that you are committed to, and you have to just compare it to the real world, that's my final thought. It's okay to have ideology. That's fine. Okay? Ask yourself the question, is that ideology materially improving any place in the square footage of the United States? And if your ideology is all about, like, defund the police and more, like, drug usage sites and, you know, everyone's streets is their own, then if you think San Francisco is going well, I don't believe you, honestly. Because, fine, prove it to me. Go to Fisherman's Wharf, if you're a young woman, you believe this, with no one with you, and walk 1 mile, 1 mile alone, from midnight to 1 a.m. Walk from Fisherman's Wharf, the Transamerica building, and prove to me how safe San Francisco is. And be like, oh, I'm scared. Oh, you're scared. It never used to be that way. Muggings, robbing, beating, that never used to happen in San Francisco. Everyone felt safe to walk the streets. And now all of a sudden, people are totally terrorized. And it's happening in New York. It's happening all over these places. We've allowed these hyper-aggressive, these ferocious academic ideologues to capture the entire society, and they never have to live under the consequences of their own ideas. They will escape them and leave you fighting over the dust of their governance. With that, let's do some questions, and God bless you guys. Thank you. Okay, so the way it's going to work, a couple things. No need to raise your hand. You can start lining up right there. If you disagree, you're welcome to go to the front of the line. You should find out if Ibram X. Kendi actually invites disagreement tomorrow. Second thought, this is a largely conservative audience. So when someone with a more liberal view might say something you find wacky or strange, don't boo them, don't hiss at them. Instead, respectfully listen to them and honestly applaud them for coming to an event that is not ideologically necessarily as friendly. So we invite the disagreement. We want it. We are a healthier country when we can hear the other side. Okay? All right. We have a lot of time for questions, so let's have some fun.
Good evening, Charlie. Thank you so much for coming here tonight to San Jose State University. My name is Aiden. I'm a young conservative. I'm actually the chapter president of Turning Point USA at UC Berkeley. I'm excited to be here tonight, especially to hear your thoughts. I'm recently engaged to my now fiance.
Good.
And I would like to hear your thoughts about constructing a new family and a new society in our modern world. What can I do? What can us as young conservatives do to promote family values in this leftist area?
First of all, I'm so happy to hear that you're getting engaged and getting married. Young people, you need to do that more and do it younger and do it earlier. And look, in a world that's falling apart, you need to go out of your way to act in a way that preserves the good, the true, the beautiful, and the things that eternally actually matter, like your relationship with God, your family, having kids. And so just some, I mean, you're asking, you know, for advice, happy to give some. The first thing, though, is good on you. And that is the hard task. And it's one of the reasons why I speak so openly against hookup culture and just all this trash that has infected the younger generation. And by the way, it's not some sort of speculation. The more we have embraced this idea of free sex and hookup culture, we have the most depressed, most suicidal, most alcohol addicted, most drug addicted generation in history. maybe we should ask the question, like, going around and acting like a rabbit in your sexual ethics, is that actually creating happier people? And it's not. It's actually creating more distance. It's creating more bitterness. It's creating more depression. It's creating all these different things. So good on you. And so I want to tell you this, that the hard things in life are the fulfilling things. And one of the big lies that we are seeing in modern society is this idea that you can have a joyful, happy, deep, and fulfilling life while not putting in any of the work. And the sad reality for any of you that have been around, you know, the beautiful things take commitment and they take discipline. In fact, it takes saying no to your flesh on a daily basis, to not watch pornography, to not smoke weed, to not, I don't think you should drink at all, but if you drink, to not drink in excess, right? To actually ask yourself the question of, am I becoming the best version of myself? And I don't even say those things necessarily in a judgmental way. I really don't. If you're doing those things, you're going to hit a wall eventually. Like, the laws of nature will come to, I'm just trying to warn you, the quicker you can escape from that, the better, and to be free of that. And so the challenge for young people, especially young men, because it doesn't come as easier for young men, young women have their own challenges, which we can talk about, which is, can you commit to one partner, one person for the rest of your life? And that's a beautiful thing. That is an eternal promise that will bring you joy for the rest of your life and have lots and lots of children. God bless you. Thank you.
Hello. I'm a conservative Muslim American. And my question is, why do you think there has been less cooperation or no corruption at all between conservative right-wing America and Muslim, the community at large, when ideally we have the same values of family values and everything we find? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, welcome. I'm glad you're here. So a lot of it has to do with a lot of, let's just say, post 9/11, post-war on terror, understandable tension there that I don't think has ever been sorted out. I do think there's a place, because there's a lot that we agree, right? I had this conversation with Patrick Bet-David. Also, I am very clear. I have some, let's just say, massive theological differences between Muslims. But I would much rather work with Muslims to try and stop the chemical castration of children than have to live under the tyranny of the trans mafia that is going after children and medically kidnapping them any day. But I feel it's also important that I'm not, you know, we can have a theological discussion otherwise. That's not that helpful. But some of it is, and you have to understand where conservatives are coming from, though. There are some Muslims, not necessarily you or even, you know, the group that you come from, that do talk about not a free society, implementing Sharia, having a more theocratic form of government, right? That's a thing that needs to be sorted out, especially among some of the higher levels in Muslim society. What I see that's promising, right, is when Muslims are actually showing up more at school board meetings than rank and file Christians to fight for the right things politically. For that, I say, honestly, let the ethical monotheists unite against this godless, secular Marxist agenda, and then we can have our spirited theological debate. Thank you for being here. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ryan. Thank you so much for your speech earlier. And my question has to do with affirmative action, and I mentioned several times earlier. In the history of the United States, as we all know, Civil War ended in 1865, and a lot of people think that, you know, slavery ended back then, but there was another form that is called indentured servitude that lasted until, you know, around the early 1900s. And so this form sort of continued, and then we got the civil rights movement in 1965. And so my question is, you know, given the history, there are, you know, injustices done on people of color, and do you think that they deserve some sort of, you know, reconciliation? And if so, if not, with affirmative action, what form? And if affirmative action is the answer, which, according to your answer earlier, not exactly what you agree with, but for what length, right? How long should it last? No, that's my question.
No, like no reconciliation, no reparations. We've already overly prioritized in society. I'll prove it to you. There is institutional black privilege in society today, and no one wants to say it out loud. Blacks can get into college with lower test scores. They get more acting contracts. They're literally in every other television commercial. Right? They're allowed to, literally, if a white person says a certain word,
you could be completely terminated from public life, right? And so we've spent trillions of dollars post-Great Society, post the Civil Rights Act paired with the Great Society. Did any of that help? No, actually, blacks got poorer on average. And so before the Great Society, 75% of blacks growing up in America had a father and a mother in the home. Now that number is anywhere between 20 to 25%. So America got significantly less racist. We spent trillions of dollars in our urban corridor. We implemented affirmative action in our government hiring practices, in our corporate hiring practices, in our college admissions. And yet, blacks on average are poorer than they were in proportion to the 1960s. What changed? And the answer is that we are not confident. We're not honestly courageous enough to empower black voices to say, hey, you have to fix the problem in your own communities. It's not about white guilt or white pandering. It's about how about you stay with the woman you impregnate? How about you stop embracing gangster rap culture? How about you stop listening to music that glorifies the worst part of society? And people are afraid to say this. And Thomas Sowell wrote an entire book about it. And the affirmative action creates race resentment is what ends up happening. And while I acknowledge that, yes, of course there were laws that were unjust in the past, we've already lived under the biggest reparations program in the history of modern society, and it's been an abysmal failure. You want to know what true liberation would look like? Black America taking responsibility for their actions and doing the 3 to 4 things that are necessary to succeed in America. Getting married before you have kids, graduating from high school, get a job, any job, and not committing crimes. This is what drives me nuts about the looting stuff, is that people say, well, it's just a matter of, you know, it's a matter of survival. How about you stop acting like a criminal? How about you stop stealing stuff and we justify it? And the more that we do that, the more we are building a baseline of an acceptance. And here's the thing, just so we're clear, blacks make up about 12% of the American population, more specifically black men, 6% of the American population. They're responsible for 60% of the murders. That's a thought crime. You have 6% of the American population doing 60% of the murdering. And yet white people are the problem? No. It's black privilege. And I'm not afraid to talk about it. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Do you want a follow-up?
Sorry, you want a follow-up?
Yeah. I have a short follow-up. So thank you for your response, and that was great insight. And it sounds like, you know, you're personally affected to an extent through the effects that you talked about, you know, through the black communities. And since we are affected, and you as well, do you think we have some sort of responsibility to sort of fix the problems on, you know, instead of just giving our opinion, actually doing to an amount of what we can do? And if so, what would that look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. So here's what's amazing, is despite the fact that Asians have harder job getting into college, harder job getting Asians are like the wealthiest group in America by far. Despite all the things that are thrown, and you might ask the question, why? Well, it's because Asian Americans stay loyally married far more than any other ethnic group. They prioritize education, and I don't want to overly generalize, but Asian moms don't put up with their kids committing crimes. Am I right? Right? A bunch of Asians looting? That dog does not hunt in the Korean American community or the Chinese American community. So, yeah, there's like strong social fabric and cultural fabric that say it's not acceptable to engage in this sort of behavior. So, no, I don't think we should ask for any special treatment. I think this, what is the goal? The goal is to do our best to try to create a society that values meritocracy and values work ethic and things you can change, not things you can't change. Thank you, man. God bless you. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. My name's Ella Bond. I'm the chapter founder and president of Butte College up in Chico. And my question for you is, what advice would you give for a brand new chapter officer to grow, to fight against the crazy liberals that come and yell at us every time we table?
Well, first of all, so glad you're involved with Turning Point USA. Most important thing a young person can do is start a Turning Point USA group. Honestly, it's going to strengthen your resolve. Look at it as an opportunity to grow stronger in your views, to grow deeper in your commitment to the pursuit of truth. And they're going to try to cancel you and censor you and smear you. Look at it all as pure joy, as it says in the scriptures, right? To be persecuted in the name of truth. So it's a question of attitude, right? Instead of acting like a victim when all those things happen to you, say, you know what? I'm so lucky because I'm going to learn how to better defend my positions because the world is really nasty and tough. And that's one of my problems with college campuses in general, is that it creates this false reality that, like, I can't hear different ideas. I can't possibly, you know, be challenged or whatever it might be. And to be perfectly honest with you, like, life is really, really nasty at times. It can come at you very fast. Turning Point USA leaders that have had to deal with that kind of hostility are far better prepared to live a happy, productive, and joyful life versus their left-wing counterparts that have been completely insulated from any criticism, never have to deal with any sort of backlash. And, you know, you call it safe space or bubble wrap or whatever it is. But there will be a time when all of a sudden you go through a difficult moment in your life. And I could say this from someone who's, you know, had a fair amount of those over the last 11 years. It doesn't get easier, but you do manage it better when you've been through prior crises. And I really feel for the 21-year-old social justice warrior that thinks the biggest threat to society is a conservative coming on campus talking about these ideas, because they're not going to make it when the mortgage comes due and their credit card company calls to collect and they're having a bad day at work. Like, how are they going to deal with actual problems? But you're going to be prepared. God bless you. Thanks so much.
Hi, my name is Spencer, and I'm a freshman here at San Jose State. So my question is about what you said earlier about Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's qualifications for the Supreme Court and how you mentioned that she was unable to define what a woman is, and I'd like to compare that to Justice Barrett. So Justice Jackson went to a public high school, attended an Ivy League law school, clerked for the Supreme Court, was a public defender, served on the Sentencing Commission, was a district judge, and served on the Court of Appeals. And as for Justice Barrett, she was a Supreme Court clerk, and she also sat in the Court of Appeals. And when she was being questioned by the Senate during her confirmation, she was asked to name the freedoms of the First Amendment, which she struggled with. So my question is, what makes Justice Barrett more qualified than Justice Brown?
So first of all, what does your shirt say? I can't see that.
Trump 24 years in prison.
Oh, okay, yeah. Got it. Yeah, that's got it. But we could talk about that in a second. I was like, seeing double. I was like, are you a Trump fan or not? Because, yeah, obviously not. How is Ketanji Brown Jackson's Ivy League credentials impressive if she got in with affirmative action? Why is that impressive? And by the way, Amy Coney Barrett did her entire hearing without a shred of notes in front of her. You remember that? She had nothing but a notepad, all from memory. Ketanji Brown Jackson, I will just ask you, do you think it's important that one of the nine people determining the most important interpretation of our laws knows what a woman is?
Well, right. My counter to that is that we shouldn't really be seeing the world in black and white. And a woman is, it's more than what meets the eye for a definition.
No, it's not. No, we should see the world through male and female.
Why?
Definitely. Well, why? Because I live in reality, not in Narnia or some sort of weird created academic abstract space that doesn't exist.
So why shouldn't a person be socially welcome to identify with a gender outside of the binary?
Well, anyone can pretend to be something they're not, but that doesn't make them the thing that they're not. Can I be black?
No.
Oh, but why can't I socially become black? Blackface, right? I could pretend, wear camouflage, masquerade as something that I'm not, right? How's that different than a trans person?
Race and gender are two completely separate things. They have nothing to do with each other, and the existence of being transgender does not imply the existence of being transracial.
So you can pretend to say that you have ovaries when you don't, but you can't put makeup on to pretend to be a black person.
What transgender women are claimed to have ovaries?
There's lots of men that pretend to have ovaries. In fact, the CDC guidance says right now that men can chest feed. Do you think men can chest feed?
That's not the sole criterion for being...
So let me ask you a question. What is a woman?
A woman is someone who identifies as one.
Answer the question without saying the word woman. You can't say the word woman. That's called circular reasoning. It's like saying a tree is something that looks like a tree. So I'll ask again, what is a woman?
A woman is a person who lives a lifestyle aligned with feminine characteristics, not necessarily your chromosomes or your genitals.
So someone who just wears a dress. So what you are doing is you are reducing womanhood to a costume.
No. So are you suggesting that, like, a transgender woman goes about her day pretending to be a woman, but then when she gets home, she starts acting like a man?
No, delusional in every part of life, I understand that. But that doesn't mean they're not delusional. There's a series of mental conditions where you could pretend to be a wolf. Can you be trans species, too? Does your own mental condition dictate external reality, yes or no?
Not necessarily.
Okay, then why do you believe that a biological man can become something that he is not because he thinks it?
Because gender is not interchangeable with sex.
Yeah, right. So there are zero genders. There are only two sexes. Gender is a made-up term that started in the academy in the 1960s. Talking about sex, which is the only thing that actually can be proven and that matters, XXXY, I will ask the question again. Why is it that a man can suddenly become a dress and can be treated exactly the same as a woman that is biologically, not just biologically different, but somebody has a different brain, a different hormonal system, menstruate, have children? I'll be very honest with you. It is so unbelievably insulting to women to have men have to lecture that all it takes is some weird dude with testosterone can put makeup on, wear a thong and a dress, and he suddenly becomes a woman. Here's at the essence of the issue, is that no matter how much surgery you do, no matter how many drugs you take, you don't stop being the thing that you were born. You don't get to determine your reality by a stroke of the will. I don't deny for a second that the trans person thinks that they are. Certain people think that they're younger than they are. Some people think they're taller than they are. Some people think they're richer than they are. Some people think they're innocent when they're not, like Bob Menendez. There's plenty of delusional people in this world. It's up for society to say no to the delusional and yes to reality. It is for us to not allow us to be reined under the tyranny of somebody's imagination. I appreciate you being here tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, next question. And give it up for him. That's not easy to do at a conservative event. I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, what's up, Charlie? I actually got three questions. First one is, can you say at least one positive thing about liberals?
Liberals or leftists? That's the big difference.
Liberals.
Traditional liberals believe in free speech. They're just weak, and they allow the tyranny of leftists. I will say this. I wish the right fought as hard as the left does. I will say that. I wish conservatives fought as hard as the Marxists do. I have respect for how hard they fight.
Cool. Second thing is, do you ever think it's possible to have an independent president ever?
Good question. Probably not in the short term. Yeah, probably not anytime soon. We live in a two-party state largely, but yeah.
Cool. And then final question is, will you ever consider running president?
No, I'm having way too much fun doing this. And no, and there's far more qualified people than a kid who didn't go to college and host 3 hours of radio. But I'm about to be 30, which comes with its own fun challenges and stuff. But I hope we have a country by the time I'm 35, but I'm not running for anything. I'm here running Turning Point USA to save the country today. So, thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
First of all, I want to commend you for coming to such a left-wing campus, considering your views, so thank you for coming. But I heard you mention safe injection sites, and drug overdose is such a big issue today. And there's this meta-analysis of 75 studies that shows that it reduces overdoses, increases access to health services, and is not associated with increased crime or increased drug use. So what reasons do you have for being against it?
Do you think that San Francisco is a clean city?
So they don't have clean injection sites, I don't think, but no, I guess not.
I believe they do have injection sites.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Hmm. So do you think San Francisco is a clean city?
No, I do not.
Okay, so why do you think that is?
I'm not sure. I guess just a lot of crime and homelessness and whatnot.
Sure. So we have 96,700 overdoses in America right now. Mm-hmm. Off the top of my head, 72% of opioid, like 72% of all deaths for young men are opioid related. Having quote unquote safe injection sites is nothing more than subsidizing an addiction to get somebody closer to the inevitable death.
In this meta-analysis from Vancouver and Australia, so, it shows that it lowers.
I am positive that study says that. Post-COVID, I think any study from the major health industries that contradict what I am seeing is steaming hot garbage.
Well,
here's my evidence. If you walk the streets of San Francisco, you will see littering of needles, feces. You will see homeless people that are completely addicted. And let me talk more morally here, okay? If you have somebody who is addicted, is it better to further their addiction or get them help so that they can break free of that addiction? That's a moral question, not a scientific one.
You could give people help while creating safer conditions for those who are still doing it and haven't gotten help yet.
No, so that's tapering. That's a separate issue. That is not what safe injection sites are. Tapering is perfectly fine because if they stop using a form of opioid, they could die. Safe injection sites is the continuation of the addiction subsidized by the taxpayer because we don't have the courage to say, you are suffering under a self-inflicted addiction. We're going to get you help, but you first must take responsibility for your own actions. The problem with the premise of safe injection sites is society itself is saying, you're really a victim, and we're going to give you the needles and give you the tools. And you could walk into San Francisco at any one of their health sites, and they will give you a kit, literally a kit of syringes and needles and literally an ability to put a large rubber band, a tourniquet, around your arm to be able to find the veins that you can inject. Unsupervised, might I add you, unsupervised. That's not a matter of tapering or getting people off of it. A decent or a sane society would say, you know what? There's a lot of suffering here. Let's try to get you off of these things, not make it easier for you to continue to do drugs, which only continues the cycle of despair and death. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. Earlier you were talking about sex and gender, there only being sex, gender not existing. I was wondering, like, how you define male and female and, like, what criteria you use to define them?
XX and XY chromosomes.
Okay. So, with, like, intersex people then who might be born with like XX chromosomes, but they have
an exception to the rule, right?
Yeah.
One in every 25,000 cases. Yeah. But that doesn't make the rule any less true. It's like saying if you see someone with an amputated leg, you say, oh, wow, that's not normal, but you still have something normal to compare that to. It doesn't make that the rule.
Yeah, I guess. So my question is more like, if somebody then does have like XX chromosomes, but they're born with like male anatomy, male anatomy.
So they're intersex.
Yeah. So would that person be male to you or female?
So if they're XX chromosomes with male anatomy?
Yeah.
I'm not even, how common is that?
It depends on, like, the specific, I think that one's Turner syndrome. So that can be, like, in 1 in 500 boys to, like, 1 in 2,500 boys.
How do you think they should identify?
I personally, in those cases, you know, like, you say that there's only sex, but I personally think that those people should be able to identify how they want to identify because it's, you know, like, would you say that that's, like, an unclear circumstance or?
Well, I think that their chromosomes are rather clear, right?
Yeah.
So and they have displaced genitalia.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Okay. But so you would want them then to present as female, even though.
Well, it's not a matter of what I want them to present; it's what they are.
Yeah. So they.
And wait, did you say 1 in 500 cases?
Yeah.
That's insanely made up. I got to be honest. Like that, you said 500,000 or 500?
500.
No way. That's yeah.
Yeah.
It's what? Yeah, so 1 in 3,000 is more accurate. Okay.
All right, we can use 1 in 3,000. So,
just a factor of 6, but yeah.
So then do you think that those people who are, you know, they have male anatomy, they should wear dresses, present feminine?
What is their hormonal makeup? I'm curious.
Those people would have, like, male, like, testosterone. So they
would have more testosterone than estrogen.
Yeah, in those cases.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that, actually. Yeah, I'd have to think about that.
So
but,
then...
But the fringe case should not dictate the rule. Well, that's the point. Is that fringe cases in any scenario, whether it be rape, incest, and abortion, or intersex with trans issues, is not the heat or the heart of the debate at all. In fact, if I understand correctly, the study on intersex, again, it's somewhat of a distraction of the few fringe cases, that there can be... at the young age, like surgery that actually ends up helping based on the hormonal makeup. Is that not right?
I mean, I think like it's better when they're adults to have certain procedures like that done. I think it can lead to issues when it's done when they're younger, but I do think that there are.
Do you think anatomy has anything to do then with determining biological sex?
When you say determining biological sex, do you mean like in how we define sex or like?
I'm just curious. Again, I just want to reiterate, we don't have 15% of high school girls in America that are quote unquote non-binary because of intersex issues. We have 15% of high school girls saying they're non-binary because it's a social contagion that is infecting people that are perfectly normal and healthy with XX and XY perfectly functioning genitalia systems. That's the real issue. And so, while I acknowledge this is incredibly murky and I need to think about it, this is a rare disease to muddy the issue up that biological reality needs to continue to exist regardless of somebody's own personal imagination.
Yeah. I think, so, like, from my understanding of sex, like reproductive biologists don't necessarily use chromosomes. They use, like, what... gametes you produce, like what sex cells, so like sperm or ovae, but I don't know that...
Let me try to find some common ground here, okay? So when the Biden government comes out and they say that men can take drugs to lactate and chest feed, do you think we've probably gone too far?
I haven't seen Biden say that.
That's so okay. He didn't. His government did. But I'm just trying to find some common ground because... like when the government says that it's, how about this? When the government calls women that are pregnant birthing people, do you think we're probably going too far?
I'd have to ask you like more questions about what you believe because I don't know.
It's pretty simple and transparent. Yeah, I believe what people have believed for 5,000 years, that there's man and woman and that you can't pretend to be something that you're not. I also believe what 99% of Americans believe. So it's really not that complex. But the fact you can't immediately answer gets right to the point of this, which is that we have this radical ideology that has infected every major part of American society. And I don't think we should be focusing on fringe issues or fringe cases when it's literally staring us in the face and it's a social contagion that is resulting in tens of thousands of people chopping off their genitalia to create irreversible damage for the rest of their life. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Hi, I was wondering, what do you think about the viewpoint that both Trump and Biden, if they committed crimes, should be investigated and prosecuted?
What crimes did Trump commit? I'm curious.
That's why I think they should be investigated and seen in a trial in court. We don't know for sure whether he committed crimes, but there is some good evidence to indicate that it might be possible, and why shouldn't we have a trial to see what the result is?
Okay, so that's actually a really good-hearted question. So for all of our adult life, actually since the founding of America, when you are a former president and you are running for a political office, unless you literally ran somebody over with your car maliciously, we're going to be very careful using the instruments of the Department of Justice, because it does two things. It looks nakedly political. It takes the person out of the playing field so that you can vote for that person. And the third thing is it makes us all distrust the justice system. And so what would make actually more sense is that we should allow the voters decide whether or not they want Trump to be president or Biden to be president, not Jack Smith's own personal decision of who he wants to become president of the United States. And so that's a far more logical and rational way. You show me the man, I'll show you the crime, right? We have a legal code that is so voluminous. As James Madison said, more laws, the less justice. Cicero said something very similar. And again, we're getting to a place where we're going to investigate every candidate for every office, and then the enforcement of that will be whoever controls the Department of Justice. And let me tell you right now, at the FBI building, they're not all wearing MAGA hats, right? That is tilted in one direction and in one side. I would much prefer to say, you know what? Detente, Biden, Trump, let's see what the voters actually want. Instead, Donald Trump is under active indictments facing 500 years in federal prison. This has never happened before. And they say, oh, it's because Trump is a criminal. Oh, really? Trump is a criminal. Well, Hillary smashed devices and Joe Biden sold our country out to China. I have to be lectured about Donald Trump giving a speech, on the Capitol Hill or mishandling documents. How about you sit this one out, buddy? All right. But the more important issue is the question of why don't we allow the people actually decide who gets to be president, not unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., that are actively interfering with our constitutional right to pick who gets to run our country. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Follow-up question?
I'm sorry?
Follow-up question?
Really quick, yeah.
Okay. Or why shouldn't we then have a trial for Joe Biden so the public can see what he actually did and make a decision based on
that? No, I mean, at this point, that's why I support impeachment, is you have to fight fire with fire. We shouldn't take this laying down, right? Okay, they crossed the Rubicon. Now it's time to impeach Joe Biden and put actual crimes on display. 10% for the big guy, hold back your income, right? Conference calls with your son Hunter. I'll be very honest, I don't rejoice this. This is sad. This is sad that we have to go to this place. I would much rather have an election, not a competition of who could prove the most stuff in a hearing or some sort of fake trial with Fannie Willis or Alvin Bragg or Letitia James. I hope you guys understand how insane what's happening with Letitia James is right now. This is literally the New York Attorney General just saying, I'm going to take Donald Trump's business empire. If third world governments did this stuff against former presidents, we would sanction them. And so, no, I don't rejoice in it, but I do think it's necessary at this point. And we have to know that, remember, the gentleman before asked me the question. I think he was a gentleman. I don't want to assume his gender. But the gentleman said, he asked the question, he said, what do you respect from the left? They fight to win. It's about we as conservatives need to start to fight to win, or else we're going to lose our country. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Hello. First off, I just want to say it's a shame nobody's mentioned this, but I like your tie, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
So I identify as a conservative. And Roger Scruton defined conservatism as the sentiment that good things are easily destroyed, but not easily created. I've noticed that in all of your various lucubrations, and printed on every single poster in here is the word rebel. My question to you is, how are people with personalities rebellious to authority satisfied at the heart of a conservative movement seeking to preserve mass social upheaval and the maintenance of our status quo?
Can you just help me out? So what are you asking? You're asking how are we conservatives while being rebels?
Or? I'm asking, well, how are you satisfied as being a rebel in a conservative movement that tries to preserve the status quo?
Well, I don't. I'm not part of something that tries to preserve the status quo. So,
yeah. Like strong families.
Yeah, I mean, I just praised one of our chapter leaders for getting married at a young age and having kids. And I mean, I also speak openly against pornography. We should not legalize weed. I mean, yeah, the status quo. I also think that Greg Abbott should mobilize the Texas National Guard and secure the southern border. That's hardly the status quo. So, I'm not really sure what you're getting at.
Well, I just think that when we identify ourselves as rebels, do we want to just give the message to the youth and the people after us that rebels had to fight for this stuff?
Okay, yeah, I'm not really sure what you're asking, but we are rebels. Like, they control everything. I don't want to lie. I mean, they control Hollywood, Silicon Valley, academia, the entire governmental apparatus. It is a rebellious act. As Orwell said in one of his beautiful essays, he said, in the land of tyranny, speaking the truth is a revolutionary act. And so us as truth tellers in a tyrannical country is literally a revolutionary act. So I think we're just arguing over semantics, but I agree with everything you've said.
What are you trying to conserve?
Families, faith. Like, I want church attendance to go up, like, immediately. I'm trying to preserve the country that we had from becoming a third world hellhole from having our borders wide open. Like, I could continue, so... Thanks for the question. Appreciate it. Thank you. Again, if you disagree, feel free to pop on up. But, yeah, please.
Hey, Charlie. Thank you so much for coming to San Jose. I spent 2 years as a chapter vice president, and I'm getting my teaching credential at California State East Bay. So wish me luck in the public education field. But besides all that, I did have a quick question on foreign policy, if we could pivot really quickly. One thing I've really appreciated about you lately is your willingness to call out the money pit that is Ukraine, the fact that we're wasting just gobs, billions of dollars in Ukraine so that we can, hold some terrible concrete apartment blocks in Bakhmut? I don't know. But I'm wondering if this whole Ukraine debacle has sort of changed or molded your opinion on other aspects of, say, isolationism. Like, I myself am pretty hardcore isolationist. And the two examples that I think of are, like, Pakistan, the fact that they don't hold their nukes well, the fact that they may or may not have harbored bin Laden, and we still give them $100 million a year. And I know it's a touchy subject because some idiots have been really rude to you about it, but we give $4.5 billion per year to Israel. And my take on that is, hey, if they want to build an Iron Dome, let them build an Iron Dome, but I don't want my tax dollars going to it. So what I'm getting at with the question is, have you become more isolationist as this Ukraine war goes on, just as a flashpoint issue in Ukraine, or do you think your view has expanded throughout the rest of the world as well?
Sure. And I've seen some people enter the line. If you guys disagree, you could tell Macy there. She'll help you to the front of the line. I just want to make sure everyone's aware of that. I become more of a patriot, honestly. I don't like the term isolationist. I think there's a time to go kill our enemies and crush them, regardless of where they are around the world. I'm not a hawk by any, like that neocon hawk. Let's start with Israel. I have Israel envy, I'll be honest. I wish we had a border like Israel does. I wish we were able to deport foreigners like Israel does. Like that, I'm really jealous of them, right? So as far as aid to Israel, the best argument I could give for aid to Israel is, as a Christian, the ability to access my holy sites is an absolute imperative for any American citizen or a Westerner. And it is a fact that if Israel were to fall to their Arab neighbors, we would not be able to access the archaeological sites, Capernaum, Bethlehem. Well, Bethlehem is already captured. It's a great example, actually, of what happens when the Arab countries do that. Or, you know, Hebron. I will fully acknowledge I'm not like a defender of the Israeli government. They have lots of things to explain themselves for. But honestly, I appreciate their gusto when they say, you know what, we're going to be a country with a strong national identity. And like literally there was like 300 people that were rioting in the streets from Etria. And they're like, yep, you're all gone. It's like, wow. Why, if we do that, we're called racist. Why does Israel get to do that? It's kind of something to think about, right? But no, I do think there's a place for a partnership with Israel. Whether or not we could look at the number and all that, I'm not getting in the weeds of that. Pakistan, I haven't thought that deeply about it, to be perfectly honest. The Ukraine thing, let me just say this. I just think it's so morally objectionable and outrageous that while we have 10,000 people illegally entering the United States on a daily basis, I have to be lectured by our leaders that the most important thing is sending hundreds of billions of dollars to Ukraine. Like, that's the most important thing. How about you secure our border and you send $100 billion to our border to seal it from the invasion that's happening? Like, this is not hard stuff at all. And it's very clear that talking about Ukraine is a substitute for caring about America. And that drives me nuts, is that there are young people in this audience that are going through serious financial difficulty, that have trouble buying groceries, trouble buying gasoline. And our leaders are so focused on a proxy war abroad, by the way, that our own government wanted. Even if you're super pro-Ukraine, this is a fact that you have to live with and you have to try to wrestle with. That Joe Biden dispatched Boris Johnson to obliterate a potential peace deal that would have prevented the slaughter of people. Our government did that. Our government did that. We wanted the war. That is sick. I don't care if you are Mr. Zelensky and you have the Ukraine flag over everything. You should find that so unbelievably evil that our government would dispatch Boris Johnson and blow up a potential settlement. Hundreds of thousands of people have died because our government saw dollar signs. They saw dollar signs. And that is, I don't care your political views, right, left, indifferent, that is a disgrace, is what that is. And so my opinion has been the entire time, why do I never hear about peace? You have to try to broker peace. People are dying. The slaughtering is continuing. No one's going to get everything they want. Here's a thought crime. Eastern Ukraine wants to be part of Russia. No one wants to say that out loud, okay? They speak Russian. They're ethnically Russian. Again, how is it in our, like, interest? Like, oh, no, it's 100 miles this way, 100 miles that way. Like, that's not the most important thing facing the United States. Get them in the room. Tell them to stop the killing. Stop the supply of arms. Tell Putin to stop the invasion. And you draw the line and you say, Ukraine will never be part of NATO. But our leaders are not willing to say that. Because they make billions. The war industrial complex makes billions. Orwell, again, warned us about this. A regime perpetually at war never has to address the needs of the citizens at home. They will distract you about what's happening overseas. They did this in Vietnam. They did this in Afghanistan. No win wars that impoverish our country. And you want to know why young people are like revolting against the system, or they should be, honestly? We've known nothing but a nation at war since our earliest memories. All we've known is no win conflicts. So, you know, blessed are the peacemakers, as it says in the scriptures. And our, yeah, that's right. Credit Jesus for that one. And honestly, shame on our leaders. And Joe Biden, he's going to need the forgiveness of Jesus Christ for dispatching Boris Johnson to start a war. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
He's got a follow up.
I'm sorry. No, we've got to get to the next one. I'm sorry. Got to get to the next one.
Hi again. This one isn't as much of a disagreement, just a question. If you were in power, what policies would you pass to address that?
Identical to what Rudy Giuliani did in the 1990s. Compassionate but tough, which is we're going to give you help, we're going to give you services, but the streets are not your home. That we're going to find a way to do both. And he did it in a way where homelessness was rampant. You guys remember New York in the late 80s. It was not safe. It was not orderly. And New York became the gem of America. But you have to be tough. You have to be willing to have police power and do it lovingly and say, excuse me, sir, we're going to not allow you to have this tent on the side of this street. We're going to put you in a homeless shelter. We're going to give you a meal. We're going to give you mental health support, whatever it might be. But and by the way, being homeless is not a permission slip to commit crimes. Let's be very clear. And I think it deteriorates property values. And here in San Jose, I'm driving into the campus, guys. It's like, this is not good for morale. It's not good for the aesthetic of the city. It makes people, I think, nastier. It makes you less likely to be on the streets to talk to your fellow citizen. It's bad across the board. So exactly what Mayor Rudy Giuliani did in the 90s to clean up the streets. Thank you very much. We'll get to the next one. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. Thank you for coming to speak today. I've been a lifelong Californian, born and raised in San Jose, 31 years. I've watched California change in ways I'm sure most people here that have lived have seen. Homeless people are not the same breed that they were when I was a child. When I was growing up in school, they said, equality, you know, treat everyone equally. There's no, you know, we shouldn't treat each other with racism. Treat everyone equally. Growing up now, it's a complete reverse of racism. It's okay to treat white people, Asian people, which are white adjacent somehow.
Yes.
It's insane. And what you said was so brave, you know, intellectually honest about the the society that we live in, the Bay Area, not just San Jose, but the entire Bay Area, that they propagate saying, oh, stop Asian hate, but they don't mention who's committing the hate.
That's correct. Yes, it's disproportionately young black men.
Our laws have changed. We've completely banned open carry, you know, firearms. That was over 10 years ago.
That's around anymore. That,
I know, and I was surprised. And then we raised the age of purchasing a rifle from 18 to 21.
Let's get to the question quick. We're running out of time.
I'm getting to the question. Yeah. I bring all of this up. We raised the age of for purchasing a firearm from 18 to 21. We raised the age of smoking from 18 to 21.
Please get
we
to it. Yep.
Lowered the age of transitioning.
Yes, that's correct.
From 18 to whatever it is, 12 or 14 or whatever. How do we change this course in California?
Yeah,
that
look,
is my question.
This is the big question. You have to fight. You are not alone. You are outnumbered, but you are not alone. And this is still a great state. I see my pastor friend Mike McClure here, who I just want to shout out. Does a great job. Stand up, Mike. I want to talk about Mike for a second. Stand up. He stayed open during COVID. He is a great guy. And you do it by being salt and light, and you have to not give up. One of my favorite quotes, it's not a Bible verse, which is too bad, but it's by a rabbi. It's close, though. To despair is a sin. It's close. There's a verse very close to it in Deuteronomy, but it's not exactly right. To despair is to sin. If you find yourself despairing, you are sinning against God. So that's the first answer, is don't despair. And that's a big one, by the way. Because it's hard not to just constantly be in a state of despair. You live in a beautiful state. They're destroying it. Find decent people. Viktor Frankl said there's two types of people. There's the indecent and the decent. Find as many decent people as you can, regardless of political affiliations. And then you have to fight. You have to fight tyranny wherever it is. When they try to close down Mike McClure's church, he said no. And he's really a fighter. And he baptized hundreds of people. So you have to fight. You have to fight. God bless you, man. Thank you.
Hello. Charlie Kirk, thank you for coming on to our campus tonight. And I just want to ask you this question, a disagreeing one, and a question that I think will find common ground.
All right, good.
All right. So do you personally think that the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, should have term limits?
Well, that's a good question. No, I don't. I think that it's good that their lifetime appointments and that they're not as contentious as Senate seats. I think that's a good thing.
Okay, thank you. And one last question is that, you know, do you think we can ever get to a time, you know, where both sides can respectfully disagree and agree with each other, you know, on college campuses? Because, you know, I've been here for 2 years, and Turning Point USA was here last October, fall semester, and I personally debated with them, despite being the vice president of the Democrats at SJSU, you know.
Good.
And, you know, I think it's really good that we have this type of dialogue and discussion because, you know, we're all Americans. We're all Americans here. And, you know, the first person I debated from your club is staying right over there. Her name is Morgan McMichael. Morgan, stand up. Stand up, you know. Stand up. And, you know, we had a really civil conversation.
Yep.
You know, we disagreed on a whole variety of issues. And I disagree with everything that your mother-in-law said. But
everything?
You know what?
Come on.
Man, I'm still progressive. Now,
you
come
think
on.
Racism is bad?
Come on, man. But,
all
no,
right.
Seriously.
I'm going to ask you a question because you seem like you can handle it in a second. But I will say, just two tests. Tomorrow, when Ibram X. Kendi comes, ask yourself how many conservatives are out there making fools of themselves saying he shouldn't be allowed to speak. Number two, when Ibram X. Kendi, Henry Rogers, speaks here tomorrow, does he stand here for an hour and take the hardest possible questions and invites disagreement to the front of the line? That's an important question, right?
I'll be at the event tomorrow, so.
Okay. You should ask him what racism is because he's not really sure. Anyway, you know what? You've come in great spirit. Do you have anything else to say? I mean, I could ask you a question or...
Just one question. Who do you think won the GOP debate?
Oh, Donald Trump.
Even though he wasn't there?
That's why he was the winner.
I mean, I don't know. I think Ron DeSantis had some good moments. Do you prefer Trump over DeSantis?
Yes.
Really? Come on. The guy won Florida over 20 points in 2022. Come on now, Charlie.
Yeah. The fact that you want me to support DeSantis makes me like Trump even more. I got to be very...
What? Come on, man. That's not true. That's not true.
God bless you, man. Thank you so much. And thank
you. Oh, whatever. Bless your boat. I'm giving you the best chance to be by Mo.
Thank you.
Hey, Charlie. Thank you for coming here tonight. I just have a question regarding healthcare.
Sure.
So tens of millions of Americans are like struggling with healthcare bills and medical bills. So what do you think is the free market solution to that kind of problem?
Yeah, this is an unbelievably complicated problem. Everything we're doing is making it worse. The easiest answer I could give without getting too wonky is we have to break up the hospital lobby. That's the best answer that I can give, is that the hospital cartel is doing such damage to our country. We need transparency in pricing. You walk in, you have no idea what anything costs, and it is this like shadow darkness of billing. They're like pseudo nonprofits attached with for-profits and different endowment boards. It's an unsustainable model. And you need to ask the question of what is the price of a procedure? It's not a catch-all solution. It's not a perfect solution. Trust me. But you are able. It is proven that in products where the entire society wants something, we've been able to stabilize pricing and increase the quality. Cars, smartphones, right? When you have price transparency, you empower the hundreds of millions of people to say, wait a second. 2 days in the hospital for this procedure is going to cost $27,000, and my deductible is this. It's like all of a sudden these questions create a market, and we don't have a market because the consumer is not currently informed. That is not a perfect answer. There's like 500 other problems. There's health insurance problems. There's Medicaid problems. There's Medicare problems. There are drug company problems, which I could probably agree with old liberals on, which we are living in a pharmaceutical-controlled state of Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson that want you perpetually sick. I could find great agreement on that. But, yeah, look, this is the Leviathan. It is the hardest problem in America. And the biggest issue with it is that the corporations are the ones that have cozied up with government and the everyday American people. I think there's good arguments, honestly, by some liberals on this stuff and conservatives on this. The answer is not to expand government. It's to empower the everyday American to make better choices and to stop giving favorable contracts to the four companies that have done such damage to our country, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. Thank you so much. All right, I think we have only I'm sorry, we got to get if any other disagreements. I don't think we have a ton of time left. So, yes, you have a disagreement?
Yes, yes.
Okay, great.
My name's Justin Tyne, and I just got to say I love being here. It's my first time doing this in a long time, but I have to tell you that you're loved, you're valued, and you're worthy.
Thank you.
And we all appreciate you, right? We all do. We all appreciate him. And I'm sorry, I thought I must have got a golden ticket because I just got bumped to the front of the line.
Okay.
So I just love being here. And I love Pastor Mike. I've known him for a couple of years now.
Got to answer the question. We're out of time.
All right. So it's about cannabis. All right. So when is it acceptable? Because you've already said that you don't agree with it.
Correct. Yeah, it should not be legalized. Yeah. It creates a dirtier society. Yeah.
But when is it acceptable? That's the real question.
I mean,
right?
Maybe in hospice, like maybe when your life.
But see, what if a young man, like myself?
You've done weed? I can't tell.
No. Yeah, I know. I look a little stylish, right? All right, but here's the question.
Don't do drugs.
All right. When you've got a tumor on your back and it takes the pain away, is it okay for that?
I mean, look, that. If it works for you, but like you also have to be honest that it's harming your brain.
What about anxiety?
No, I actually it increases anxiety. Read the literature from Alex Berenson and Dr. Daniel Amen that shows that it increases depression. It decreases dopaminergic responses. So it's like, oh, I have anxiety. Like, hold on a second, time out. Like, understand that half of the people that take marijuana have an adverse event with anxiety. Half. It makes it worse. Half of the people. Number two, it is a gateway drug. But number two, I don't want to get too deep into like, you know, I have a tumor and is it bad for me? The broader question is it's bad for society. It lowers IQ. It lowers motivation. And every state that legalizes weed sees crime go up, vagrancy go up, homelessness go up. And let's just ask a more macro question, right? If you were trying to destroy a society, Would you be cheering for the legalization of weed and usage of weed, or hoping that it doesn't get legalized? Of course you would want more young men on marijuana, the fighting age young men to be sitting at home and smoking dope instead of saying, no drugs, no alcohol, I'm going to commit myself to fitness, eat well, wake up earlier, do cold showers, and really be the best version of myself. There is a beautiful future ahead of you that is more than just using the cool drug. Yeah, final thought.
All right, just a rebuttal, all right, because I just do one little bit. One tiny little, one hit a day.
I'm glad it works
all right,
for you.
But hold on, because I am the best version of myself right now. I actually, I am.
Be careful saying that.
I just need a rebuttal.
I wouldn't even say I'm the best version of myself.
No, I,
be very careful saying that. That's a lot of
pride. You know what? You're right. You're right. I agree with you 1,000% because I can always do better.
Good. We agree.
I can always do better.
That's the attitude.
Right? I can always do better. But I think we as a society can go do better. And I'm sorry, I thought this was going to be a different format because you said it's your chance to be famous, right? So that's why I got all gussied up, right?
Great.
I got all gussied up.
So let me just say this as lovingly as you can. You're not making a great case not to do weed. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, next question. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Since we're like talking about like the policy of giving aid to like the to Ukrainians, like I just have a similar question. Like basically, like kind of like would you do it? Like basically, like kind of like would you have the same policy if like basically kind of tomorrow like China decides to invade Taiwan? Like kind of basically like in that case, like basically like. What like would be like your policy and thoughts about like kind of basically giving aid to Taiwan if like China decides to just
it's a good question.
And, yeah, crush them?
It depends, and I know that's not an answer you want. Foreign policy requires prudence. Did we blow up a peace deal between China and Taiwan? If that happens, then honestly, that would make me very angry. I stand 100% with Taiwan, and I think the CCP is America's greatest enemy. So I'm more sympathetic towards it. Let me just be very clear. More sympathetic. Taiwan is a sovereign nation. But also, I'll just tell you both sides of it, because I don't have a good answer. But I don't have a clear answer, which is when I see people that have been cheering for every no-win war over the last 30 years, all of a sudden talk about China and Taiwan, Lindsey Graham, Nikki Haley, I get very uneasy. Like, wait a second, why am I going to trust you all of a sudden? So it needs to be about deterrence, which is why I think the best thing we could possibly do is try to reject the bloodthirst of Washington, D.C., and try to say, you know what? Why don't we talk? I know this is like a foreign concept to D.C., but, you know, the react is if the Chinese Communist Party wants nothing but an invasion at any point in time. Look, I think they are modern-day Nazis. I think the Chinese Communist Party are, again, the party, not the Chinese people. Let me be very clear. It is terrible what they've done, and we need to stand with the Chinese people. At the same time, I do not want to see America get into a no-win war against a country that could be very, very, you know, dangerous. And honestly, war is a failure for all people. We should do everything we possibly can to avoid war. And I would only think the CCP would invade at this point if we provoked it. Don't put it past our government. Thanks. I got to get to another question. Thank you so much. Got to get to the next question. Thank you. We'll take two more if there's any disagreements. Final call. Yes, sir. Sorry to assume
you're
Charlie. Did I assume correctly? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Hey, Charlie. My name is Min. I came from Vietnam like 6 years ago. But, you know, after I came over here and I started getting to like Turning Point USA. So I really agree with you like on a lot of points because I'm following you on Instagram. So I saw your post talking about President Trump being charged with fraud in NYC. And so do you think that he still has a chance to run for the White House in 2024?
Yes, he does. Yeah. So, again, everything I'm saying politically is my own personal opinions. Turning Point USA. 501c3 educational project, but I can speak openly personally on this. So when I'm talking about Trump running for office, let me just tell you, yes, he can still run despite all the nonsense that's been thrown at him. I'll just be honest, my own personal opinion, it makes me support him even more when I see every single one of these indictments thrown at him. And I say, my goodness, this guy had a comfortable billionaire lifestyle and he was hosting a television show at Mar-a-Lago and he is going through the depths of hell. He is very flawed. So am I. We all are. He also has unbelievable virtues. He has perseverance that I will teach my daughter and say, I want you, when the world is against you, to fight as hard as Donald Trump did. I want you to learn from him. And we hear nothing but nagging. I hate him. He's this. He's that. You know what? It's easy to give up in life. It's very easy. It's easy to surrender. You know what's hard is to dig deeper and deeper when they literally take everything from you. Everything. They're going to try to put him in federal prison. They're taking his business empire away from him, indicting him in the state of Georgia. It's like, what have they not done? They have this, you know, other lawsuit alleging, you know, that he raped somebody. So stupid, the whole thing. And I think to myself, I was like, man, is there a breaking point for this man? Is there a point where he just says, forget it? I was a great president, had a sloppy election, to say the least, right? Re-election campaign. And he just says, forget it. I'm going to go golf. But he keeps going. And he keeps going. And I know some people say the tweets, or I don't like this, or I don't like that. I kind of roll my eyes, honestly, at that stuff. And I'm like, you know what? When you're facing 500 years in federal prison, I hope you would love this country as much as he still does. And so, yes, he is going to run, and I think he has a fair shot at winning. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Final question. Sorry, this will be the final thought.
So, hi, Charlie. Thank you for coming over here tonight. You mentioned within your speech that, especially here in the Bay Area, we've kind of, in a sense, defined the track that the country is going through.
That is true.
Yeah. So I've noticed an increasing amount of, you could call it, resistance or opposition to what's currently happening around the world, socially especially. And I wanted to ask your thoughts regarding this, where do you think that the opposition and the increasing opposition we're seeing here in California will be reflected across the country eventually?
So you're starting to see it here in the Bay Area. I see it in this room. I mean, yeah. And by the way, I want to just speak to you guys. We just talked about not giving up. You cannot despair. You have to fight. I know that it's hard. I know it's overwhelming. But there are so many decent people in this Bay Area, especially in the Vietnamese community and the Chinese American community and the Korean American community, people that have traditional American values that are not going to put up with this. I'm telling you. And California is worth it. This is the gem of America. You have the most beautiful state in the country. And I've visited all 50 states 5 times over. You've been given a gift from the Lord. And every time I land, Mikey and my team will tell you, I say the same thing. I say, what a crying shame what these maggots have done to this heaven on earth. And I say it every time. And I know you guys know what I mean. When you go for your morning walk and you say, is there a more beautiful place than California? And it's like, it's unbelievable, right? It's like, I love Ohio, but it's no California, right? It's like cloudy 9 months out of the year, and it creates a real hard, I grew up in Chicago. I did not know there was a place where you could see the sun in the month of February. I didn't know it existed. I didn't know it was a thing. Imagine June gloom, and it's like 27 degrees, and nothing changes. So what can we do is you have to be the vessel for change, right? You have to find issues that build consensus, and you have to just continue to feed yourself with podcasting and videos, and then find the fighters. Look, it's no mystery, guys. They're going after every truth teller. They're going after Turning Point USA. They're coming after me. They're coming after Matt Walsh, literally. You saw, and the demand is unbelievable. They went after James O'Keefe. They go after Tucker. They go after Steve Bannon. And Russell Brand, thank you. And it's not, I'm not doing this to, you know, feel sorry for us, but, you know, we're all in this together. We're all in this arena. And you guys help us. And if I can help you and Turning Point can help you, then it's a beautiful mutual thing together. But you are living through the most consequential time of whether or not this entire republic, and it starts here, will become a tyrannical wasteland. But what if, I'm not saying, oh, we take back the Bay Area and there's going to be MAGA flags everywhere. But what if you make life hard for them? What if all of a sudden they have to listen to you every time they show up at a school board meeting? They have to listen to you every time they go to a constituency meeting. That they have to get calls from you every time. Where they are annoyed and they're no longer comfortable. And you get in their face respectfully and peacefully, and you ask the questions. And you say, why did you vote on this? Why are you trying to kidnap our kids? Why are you trying to put gay pornography in the classrooms? And you don't stop. And honestly, what better place to help the rest of the country than to make them have to defend their own turf? You will free up resources in the rest of the country if you try to culturally take back San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland. And I'll close with this, and thank you for the question. I'll close with this, which is I'm a outspoken Christian, and if you are not a Christian, highly recommend it. It's pretty awesome. And it's the most important thing you can give in your life. It's the most important thing, giving your life to the Lord. And I will say, as Christians, we must understand we fight, we act, not because we want a certain outcome, but instead because we believe we have a duty. And if you're not a Christian and that doesn't move you, then at least have a duty to the prior generation. Have a duty to the country that was built for you. Don't be arrogant and ungrateful about it. Oh, what is this? This is a beautiful place, everybody. And we have a duty to the divine, a duty to the Almighty. We fight not because we like the odds in our favor. We fight because it's the right thing to do. And I know that it is so overwhelming and that it's negative and it's dark and all that. But look around. In the Bay Area, in San Jose, on a weeknight, there's well over 700 to 800 people intensely engaged in trying to fight for liberty and freedom. You can call that whatever you want. A remnant, I call that hope. And you guys are a hope of salt and light in this place of darkness. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
The United States Constitution guarantees every American fundamental rights and protection of life, liberty, and property. Salem is celebrating our founding document with a special offer, a 1953 Oman U.S. Constitution lithograph. Understand the value of these lithographs is to know the story. A master lithographer, immigrant named Theodore Oman, came to this country to find the American dream. 70 years ago in 1953, Oman printed a limited number of these exceptional Constitution lithographs. Go to SalemEventStore.com to read Oman's entire story. America's most important document stands as a testament to all Americans to maintain their liberties, freedoms, and inalienable rights. Buy it and display it proudly. Buy a gift for your family and friends, for all the teachers in your communities. There's a limited number, so act today. Go to SalemEventStore.com to get your exclusive 1953 Oman U.S. Constitution lithograph. Buy it and display it proudly. While limited supplies last, there's a limited time, so act today. SalemEventStore.com, SalemEventStore.com.